future is now. And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I will not be your host the next 15 minutes because we have a very special episode in store. We have Women in Blockchain with our co-host Jess Holgreave taking control. She has two very special guests on the show today. We have Bea O'Carroll, who's head of institutional sales and relationship management at Circle. Now, if that wasn't enough, she is joined along with Ree Bahatura, who's the lead analyst at Circle Research. Now, for those of you who don't know, Circle is a peer-to-peer payments technology company founded by Jeremy Allaire and Sean Neville in October 2013. Circle's mobile payment client, Circle Pay, allows users to hold, send, and receive traditional fiat currencies. In September 2015, Circle received the first BIT license issued from the New York State Department of Financial Services. In April 2016, the British government approved the first virtual currency license to Circle. Circle is headquartered in Boston, Massachusetts, with offices all around the world, including Hong Kong and here in London. Up until December 2016, Circle Pay also operated as a Bitcoin wallet service to buy and sell Bitcoins. It has since ceased to provide such services, claiming the company is now more than ever not a consumer Bitcoin exchange and will continue to focus on global social payments and future generation blockchain technologies. They are one of the largest exchanges in the world. Not only that, they've received funding from some of the lead investors in the world, including Goldman Sachs in their last funding round. Now, if that wasn't all enough, they acquired Poloniex. Poloniex used to be one of the big crypto exchanges. If you look back to 2015, 2016, and it was struggling a little bit until Circle got involved. It gave new life to Poloniex to become one of the leading exchanges in the world, spearheaded by the Circle team. So they've done a phenomenal job. They're a phenomenal team, and we're really, really honored to have two of the top stars from Circle on the show today. So that's enough from me. Let's get onto the show and let's hear what they have to say. Let's get down to business.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jess Holgreave, and I'm really excited to be guest hosting the SVK Crypto 15 Minutes of Crypto Fame podcast. I'm a co-founder of Shios, an EOS block producer with a mission to bring more women and diversity into blockchain. On Thursdays, I'm bringing stories from interesting women working in the blockchain space to tell you their background and draw some attention to the great work they're doing in crypto. You can follow me on Twitter at JessieBlock and send me suggestions of women that you'd like to hear from too. This week, I'm joined by Ree Bahatura, lead analyst at Circle Research, and Bea O'Carroll, head of institutional sales and relationship management at Circle. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So let's kick off. Maybe you can just walk us through your kind of respective backgrounds. I think, like me, you both come from the finance world. So I'm keen to hear your journey into the space.
Sure, I can start off. I studied finance at NYU Stern as an undergrad, and then immediately after that, I joined Credit Suisse as a fintech and payments analyst, where I helped build out that franchise with my senior analyst. And it was during my time there that I learned about the inefficiencies in the payments ecosystem, and I had a client ask me about Bitcoin and crypto and its potential to disrupt payments and fintech companies. And as I started learning more about it, I realized that crypto has the potential to solve some of these inefficiencies, like the insanely high fees at times and the large number of intermediaries. So as I got more and more, as I, you know, fell down the rabbit hole, I realized that I wanted to join the crypto space and become a research analyst in crypto. So I joined Circle last May, and since then I've been building out Circle Research.
That's awesome. I think kind of the need for equity research or just research more broadly in the crypto space is so apparent, kind of coming from the traditional background sort of in finance. What are the similarities and differences that you see sort of from coming from equity research into cryptocurrency space?
Sure. So I think in terms of analysis, there have been some efforts to create ratios like the NBT ratio, which is similar to the PE ratio. to analyze equities. And then we also heavily rely on measures like market cap and volume, which is similar to how we look at, you know, how we size things in traditional markets. But I think that these in crypto, these can be gameable and they're not really high fidelity, and they don't really account for differences in crypto networks. So I think there is work being done on this front with the creation of metrics like realized cap by Nick Carter and Coinmetrics. And then for volume, Messari just released a metric called Real 10 that tracks volumes on the top 10 exchanges that are known to have legitimate volume. Beyond that, I think what's different in crypto is that there are so many different crypto networks and decentralized applications, and they're pretty dissimilar. And generally, you need to use different metrics to analyze each network or application, which makes comparables analysis kind of difficult in crypto relative to traditional markets. And then also in terms of actually doing the research, unlike in equities, like stocks or public companies are required to disclose their results on a quarterly or annual basis, and they have formal investor relations teams. But crypto networks don't really have an obligation to report results periodically. But I think that's going to change as the space matures and we get better at self-regulating. And we're already starting to see legitimate project self-reporting and efforts like Messari's registry, where projects can join to provide updates on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more in terms of that sort of formalization of reporting numbers. I think it's the big demand from it for investors as well. And B, what about you? How did you get into the space?
So slightly differently, I worked in traditional financial services like regular Wall Street for about 17 years. And I was on a business trip with a colleague and we were having dinner. And he was asking me like, oh, so what do you want to do? You want to like be an MD? You want to try another product? And I was like, you know, I just want to like really be able to jump into something and be able to measure my impact and like demonstrate like what that I can get stuff done. I don't really care if it's like opening the mail or pitching to a CEO. So of course I wake up the next day and think, all right, so I guess I'm never getting promoted. That was a poor choice to make. And this person ended up resigning from the last bank I was at like a couple of weeks later, and I connected with him, and it turned out he went to a Bitcoin exchange, and he was like, hey, I've no idea what you would do here, but I know like they really need you and this is a lot of fun, and would you ever think about coming to this world? And I was super excited. My brother had told me about Bitcoin. I'm not going to tell you I was one of these like prescient people who was like, I knew this was going to be revolutionary. I thought it was really cool. And kind of like what Rhea was saying, the more research I did into it, I'm really passionate about the remittance end of things. You know, obviously we don't really touch that part of the world here at Circle, but like that's what pushed me over the edge. Being like, I live in a neighborhood with a lot of people who are unbanked. So they rely heavily on the check cashing places. So they're getting kind of double whammied, right? Like they have to cash their check and pay 20% or whatever. And then whatever they haven't spent on rent and feeding their kids, they generally tend to send back to their countries, which is another 15 to 20%. So when I started figuring that out from like a macro level, that's life-changing dough, right? I mean, that's like a lot of money. And I thought, yeah, let's give this a whirl. So I worked there for a while, and then came across Circle, and here we are.
That's awesome. And can you tell us a bit more about your kind of day-to-day role? I think we probably have loads of listeners who have maybe bought crypto, but maybe not interacted in kind of the OTC space. Kind of how does that work, and who uses that?
Sure. So my role, actually, I think I probably have one of the best jobs in the world. So I cover both the Poloniex exchange as well as the OTC trading desk. So how it works is it's basically depending on how much you want to trade, right? So if you're looking for sort of consumers or smaller, say like smaller trade sizes, you'd probably go to Poloniex. And if you're already comfortable using crypto, right? So Poloniex is not for newbies because there's no fiat on it. You have to already own crypto in order to get on it and trade. For the OTC desk, basically, if you're looking to trade $100,000 USD worth or more in any currency, euros, GBP, dollars, you can contact the desk. So basically what we do is if someone's interested, they go through a KYC process because we need to make sure that we know who we're dealing with. We've got a number of licenses and regulatory sort of stamps of approval that we need to make sure we check those boxes. So we'll get someone through the KYC process, get them approved by compliance. They execute a very straightforward legal agreement with us that basically sets out the terms and conditions of engaging with us as a trading counterparty. And then they're connected with the desk. So what you might be, your listeners might be interested in hearing is, like, we're moving all this money, right? We're converting, like, if you wanted to buy, say, $250,000 worth of crypto, you would reach out to the desk, ask for a quote, and they'll give you a quote. Then you can accept, counter, or reject it. If you accept it, the trade is legal and final. And the interesting piece of this is most of our trading is done over Skype chat. So it's very kind of personal. Our traders are, you know, have been doing it for a long time. Everybody's really friendly. It's not a huge space, as you know. So people like kind of, we become friends with them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what happens is the other side always goes first. So they will either wire us the fiat or they will send the coins to our wallet. And as soon as we see them hit our wallet or hit our fiat bank account, we release the other side and the trade is done.
Amazing. And so most of the people who are engaging on an OTC level, is it lots of institutions, banks, or, you know, what does the kind of customer look like?
Yeah, it's an interesting makeup, actually. So we've got other trading desks, of course, because there's lots of people that are just kind of trying to arb the markets, right? Or to arbitrage one exchange off another. You've got high net worth individuals who are either maybe they need to buy a large chunk of ETH because they're buying into a project, or they just want to take a position for their portfolio. What we've seen really been interesting, sort of a trend in the last year, is more sort of venture type funds coming in. So they would be taking strategic positions in projects. And like, the reason you'd use an OTC desk is because to trade on an exchange, it's a fee-based transaction. And a lot of the less liquid coins, if you take a really big position, you'll basically blow up the market, right? There's just not enough liquidity. So if you use a desk like ours, what our guys would do is sort of break that trade up and execute it for you over a period of time. So that way the project isn't impacted, their price isn't messed up. You're protected on the downside for your investment, and it's kind of just done in a very periodic way, paced way.
Oh no, okay, ignore that. We'll edit that out. So B, are you still in contact with any of your old colleagues from the kind of traditional finance space? I know I am, and some of them think I'm crazy for being in crypto. What do people think you're doing?
Oh my god, yeah. Oh, definitely. That's actually one of my favorite stories. So they're all, I'm in touch with most of them still. They definitely thought I was nuts when I resigned my last sort of traditional job. And then you can imagine when we had the big bull run in 2017, I was probably the most popular person around. And when they kind of flipped from telling me, "You're nuts, what are you doing? You're throwing your career away," to, "Hey, can I take you for a beer? What is this? How do I buy this stuff? How do I get an account?" So yeah, it's been a very interesting ride. And what I think is really exciting now, especially even in a bear market, Rhea, I think you'll agree, is that the questions that we get from our like old school colleagues have really evolved. Like, it's no longer like, what's a wallet? It's like, okay, so if I had a multi-sig wallet, like, how can I break that up? Can I have someone from compliance and risk on there? Like, hash rates there. It's definitely, what do you think, Rhea?
Yeah, I think that a lot of our counterparts from traditional finance, you know, crypto came to their attention in 2017, and I think a lot of them have realized that there's staying potential and realized that it is an investment that can augment their portfolio. So I think over time they used, you know, the beginning of 2018 throughout 2018 to educate themselves about it. And they've come back with more.
Yeah, I think I was at a kind of crypto regulation conference this week, and there are a ton of banks, and the sophistication of everybody in the room was actually really surprising to me. It was really cool to see, you know, institutions that you might not expect really, really thinking this stuff through in a lot of detail.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, there are so many more, like you said, attendees from traditional finance at crypto conferences, and there are also more banks putting on crypto conferences. B and I went to a blockchain Oppenheimer conference, and it was completely packed. There is so much interest.
Yeah, it's really cool to see. And Rhea, I've been recently reading some of the research primers on Circle Research. I read the Mimblewimble one, and I just thought they were so cool. I think a lot of that sort of research in a really objective way has been missing from the crypto space, or certainly I haven't found very much of it. Can we expect more of that from Circle Research? Is that sort of where you're positioning yourselves? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's exactly the kind of reaction that we hope to get from our readers.
Yay!
Thank you very much. You know, the goal for me is to continue to provide in-depth and neutral research on the crypto space, because it's still very early days, and we want to take the responsibility of sifting through the noise, the bias, and the marketing speak that you see on, you know, social channels, crypto, Twitter, Reddit, whatever, off the shoulders of our readers. So that's definitely
awesome.
Going to be
that's really cool. And I'm the other kind of thing that I'm really interested in this year is the sort of rise of stable coins. I hear everybody talking about that and STOs for 2019 as the kind of the big topics. And you guys obviously also recently launched USDC. You know, why is that such a prominent thing for the industry?
So stablecoins are really important because they allow for the creation of applications that have a low threshold for volatility and require a price stable asset. So from this point of view, I think that stablecoins are helping address challenges with using crypto assets when trading on exchanges. And I think they're going to be increasingly used for things like, as B mentioned, remittances and as collateral in debt and lending applications and in prediction markets that have kind of a longer term time period and take place over a longer term. Because otherwise, without a price stable asset, it's tough to expect widespread adoption of these applications if you you know, put the risk of volatility on users that could cause them to lose a lot of money if the market moves in any direction. Which really degrades the user experience and deters users. So that's why I think that stablecoins.
Yeah,
are
it's
going to be really
it's super cool to see. Well, so many kind of different approaches being tried, but also institutions like yourselves, you know, really kind of leading the way. I think it's great. What else is for you really exciting, or and be you as well over the sort of next 12 months? What do you see happening?
Oh God, who knows? I'm never great
every
at those.
Yeah,
exactly. I think, like you said, there's a ton of buzz about security tokens, and there's a whole bunch of like new exchanges and new platforms that are popping up. So I think that's very interesting to see. Like, so what is this going to be a game changer? Like, is this what it's going to take to get our old friends from our old world to get involved? So I think like I'm pretty excited to see where that lands. Me personally, as I sort of said earlier, like what really gets me excited are the projects in Africa. So like what Galia Benartzi is doing with Bancor, Sandra Rowe, who leads up the Global Blockchain Business Council, has a couple of really cool projects she's working on, like actually getting crypto into people's hands and letting them use it and do things with it, that's what I'm really psyched about.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of that idea of, you know, how do we enable crypto adoption in third world countries that have low connectivity, a project, or I guess like longer term or area that I'm excited about is mesh networks. So Daniela Perdomo, I think she's the founder of Gotenna. And she's, you know, Gotenna is this device where you can create a network and get access to, you know, get connectivity without using Wi-Fi or cell phone connection.
Yeah, I love that too. The mesh network thing is like wild.
It's super early days, but I think there's a lot of potential there. I think other than that, something that I've noticed and that I'm really excited about is the fact that, you know, as the ICO hype died down, we saw more legitimate startups and private companies get traditional funding from VC investors. And they're tackling challenges like security, user experience, scalability, and they're shipping real working products. And by this, I'm referring to companies like Casa, which has a key management solution and makes it easy, and also has something called the Casa node, which makes it easy to set up your own full Bitcoin, full Lightning node. Starkware is another company which is addressing scalability on Ethereum using a technology called Starks. And there's this other really cool app called Lolly, which allows, it's a Chrome, or it's a plugin in your browser, and it allows you to earn rewards in Bitcoin when you shop at one of their startup partners online.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's like, how do we make it easier to get crypto in the hands of users?
I love that. That's very like cool. I also love that some of the projects that you mentioned, or actually quite a lot of them, were led by women. And, you know, one of the big reasons that I love doing this podcast is that I think that having female role models that are visible is a really great way to kind of encourage more diversity, which ultimately I think ends up helping us to build better products. Are there any particular kind of women in crypto or role models that have inspired either of you?
Well, I would say Galia Bancor, Sandra Rowe, definitely. Caitlin Long is doing some incredible stuff, like from a government perspective, in terms of like making it legal for crypto and blockchain companies to be able to do business. Like, those are three that would really jump out at me.
Mm-hmm. Two that I would mention are Meltem Demirers and Jill Carlson. They both started their own podcast recently, and they discuss topics just between the two of them and bring really fresh perspectives to the space. And Jill Carlson specifically has been a huge advocate for learning about the situation in Venezuela and how Bitcoin
is. Awesome. Yeah, their podcast is great. Clearly podcasts are the thing to do at the moment. aside from kind of making female role models more visible, is there anything else that you think as an industry we can do to help promote diversity and inclusion?
I think that we need to create opportunities for people in different walks of life to get their hands on crypto. So I think if people hold crypto, they'll be more interested in learning more about it. And that's why I think Lolly is really cool, because it allows you to earn crypto just by, you know, buying something you would normally buy, but now you can earn some Bitcoin. Another thing that I think is really cool is in 2014, the MIT Bitcoin Club, they raised $500,000 to give every MIT student $100 worth of Bitcoin, so that they would be incentivized to learn about what they're holding. So I think we need more movements and opportunities like that for,
Yeah, definitely. I'm involved in a couple of like very early stage projects with high school kids in, I would say like working class kind of neighborhoods to try to get the crypto into their hands. Like, how do they use it? Why should they care? How do we kind of structure that to sort of demonstrate exactly how powerful this can be and how it's practical for their everyday lives?
Oh, I missed you there for a minute. No, that's okay.
Sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, great. No, I think it may be just our internet.
Oh, yeah.
But that's like, fine because the audio records on both sides, so we will still have your answer to that. So that's great. Awesome. And, you know, if you have any advice, particularly for women or maybe anybody listening from finance backgrounds like yours who are interested to pursue kind of a career in crypto, what would you say?
So I would say do your homework. Like, just, I think one of the biggest one of the things I love the most about our industry and our jobs is that it's really a meritocracy, right? Like, if you have access to the internet and you can get on YouTube and you can like surf the web and read stories, you can bone up just as well as anyone who's been doing this for a few years. Like, it's definitely not too late. It's really easy. And the enthusiasm that most people that we work with, not just at Circle, obviously, but in the whole kind of ecosystem, if you show that you actually are interested and you ask questions and you like want to talk about it, you're in. Like, you know, you can just really kind of ramp up quickly.
Yeah. And I totally agree with everything that B said. Like, there are so many resources that we have available to us right now. Like, all the information in crypto is democratized. There's so many incredible writers on Medium, so many podcasts. Like, if you just listen to podcasts for a month, I think you'll be a genius. I wish I could just listen to podcasts day after day after day.
Shameless plug for you, Jess.
And I think in addition to that, like, if, you know, I think the Twitter community is really open and receptive to people reaching out to them. Like, even now, if I have a question about something, about a project or anything, I just DM someone on Twitter and they're super receptive and super willing to respond. And I try to do the same because I think, you know, the more people we have in crypto, the better it'll be, especially people with different backgrounds. That
yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think the other thing is that even the people who've been in this space the longest have only really been doing it for like 10 years. So, you know, and the kind of average career span for somebody, I think, you know, must be somewhere kind of like around the 2 to 3 year mark, maybe. And so for anybody entering it now, you know, it's not hard to learn and to kind of catch up and really be a part of it. Awesome. So
agreed.
I always finish with some quick fire questions. So maybe to keep it quick, B, you can go first. Rhea, you can go second. Are you a late night person or an early morning person?
Okay.
If you're an animal, what would you be?
Early morning.
Dolphin.
I would be a bird. So
I love that. What's your favorite food?
Oh,
I can go first.
You go.
Time. I love Asian food, especially Japanese food. So I love, my favorite food is probably anything that's ube or taro flavored. Ube.
I don't even know what either of those things are.
It's like a purple sweet potato. So they're purple and they're like naturally sweet and ube desserts are amazing.
I would say street food, which might not be the answer you're looking for, but I just love to eat stuff off carts wherever I am.
That's
and like
the best
taste
way to like fail a city, I think.
Everybody's
the
best eating.
Way to get the taste.
And who is your favorite crypto person to follow on Twitter?
Definitely.
Outside of you guys.
So you should totally go follow her because she's awesome. I really like Nathaniel Whitmore. He has an incredible way of articulating crypto narratives, and he's a beast at creating and curating.
Awesome. I don't follow him. That's a great one to know about. Cool. And if anybody wants to follow you on Twitter or find out more, what's the best way to do that?
My Twitter handle is Rhea Butoria and at Research Circle. And then if people want to subscribe to Circle Research, they can go on research.circle.com. We just launched our new website yesterday and it looks really great. So we're super excited about that. And then you can also reach out to us by email
and
at research@circle.com.
And for me, I'm more of a LinkedIn person, so I would definitely encourage you to reach out to me on LinkedIn, but please have a message because I'm one of those people that's like,
too popular.
No. All I need to know is just like, hey, what's up? Like, we both work in crypto, like, let's connect, because there's just a lot of like kind of scammy people that are reaching out and, you know, that kind of stuff. So but yeah, LinkedIn
ladies,
is probably the best way to get
so me. Much for coming on the show today, hope to see you both soon.
Thank you, Jess, it was super fun.
Thank you so much for having us. Great conversation.
Awesome. Yeah,
I want to say a big thank you to Jess for doing an amazing show, for spearheading that amazing podcast, and a special thank you to Bea and Rhea for making it on the show today. They did an amazing job. And if you haven't already, connect with the both of them. Their Twitter handles will be in the description below. Let's go. Let's make it happen. With that in mind, that's a wrap. I got to bounce. If you haven't already, follow us on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Hit us up on Telegram, SVK Crowd. If you type that in, you will find us. If you have any questions, queries, or any deals you want to show to SVK, feel free to email myself, cstory, C-S-T-O-R-R-Y, @svkcrypto.com. That's a wrap, and I've got to bounce.